The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry. We're coming to you today from our beautiful, well, beautiful studio. All our studios are beautiful, but our studio in Edstone near Stratford-upon-Avon in the beautiful Warwickshire countryside. We are coming to you from somewhere else, but you can still get the program in all of the usual places. You can get the live stream of this program every day at our website, thetrumpet.com/live. And you can find all of the old episodes there as well. And of course, as usual, we're very happy to be partnering with CRN Digital Talk Network, sending out the live stream audio. And like I said, you can get the video at our website, thetrumpet.com. I think this is my first time guest hosting since we've been working with CRN. So if you're new to the show, welcome. I would say it's very nice to see you, but I can't see you, that is. But it is great to be on more platforms, and hopefully we'll be able to get this show out to more and more people. Well, we've had lots and lots of news from around the world, as usual. I think I put together a news stack every morning, and we pass it on to Mr. Flurry and a few others. And we broke 100 pages on Monday. I don't think we've ever broken 100 pages before, or Tuesday it would have been. But coming back from that long weekend, there are a whole host of different stories. China working on a nuclear new nuclear weapons. China potentially outspending America's military. We're not going to get into those, but there's plenty of other bits of news we are going to get into. Here at The Trumpet, one of our mottos is tomorrow's news today. We had a very literal example of that over the last 24 hours. The Trumpet Brief email went out last night, one of our daily news updates. It was from your regular host, Mr. Flurry. If you're missing Mr. Flurry, you can still get your regular dose from him by going to our website, thetrumpet.com, and reading that Trumpet Brief. It was called The Fauci Virus. Talking about Dr. Fauci's role with coronavirus, like you've been hearing about from Mr. Flurry on this show. So that went out last night, and then waking up this morning, the UK news was just full of these emails from Dr. Fauci revealing how much he knew about the virus, that he was getting all of these emails from experts and from people under him at the beginning of last year. Back in 2020, the first half of 2020, warning that coronavirus was possibly engineered in a lab. And he was having these discussions behind closed doors while then coming out in public and saying, no, it's impossible. Could never have come from a lab. People were sending him info saying, well, it looks like it's man-made. It could be linked to gain-of-function research. Somebody sent him an attachment with that was in the title of the attachment. I don't think we know exactly what the attachment was, but they were emailing him, gain-of-function research in relation to COVID. And then he was out there in public saying, no, couldn't have anything to do with gain-of-function research. Nothing to see here. So just more lies coming from the top there, exposed more clearly than ever. Mr. Flurry, in that Trumpet Brief, his conclusion there has just been proved even more true than ever with that bit of latest news. He wrote, the fact that the National Institute of Health was funding communist biotechnology research while the propaganda media attacked anyone who tried to talk about the truth shows the depth of America's spiritual sickness. It's far worse than any biological pandemic. Because of spiritual sickness, America's political, economic, and military power is draining away. There's a major spiritual problem with our nations, with our people, and that is the cause of so many of the other physical problems that we see. We're also in the news, we've been getting a good hard look about the danger of hacking and cyber attacks. And this has been a theoretical danger that people have been writing about for a long, long time. You know, this could happen. This could happen. Criminals could do this. Now we're seeing what can happen, what has been happening. It's becoming very real, and it could be hitting your wallet. But I'll get to that, I think, in the second half of the show. I want to start with really the big news of the day, and that is from Israel. It looks like the long-standing prime minister in Israel there, Benjamin Netanyahu, is out of office. And this could be a pretty big deal, that you could now be having this radically left administration really coming to power in Israel. Now, it is headed by a pretty right-wing politician, Naftali Bennett. But you look at what's going on here, and I don't think he's really the one in control. Now, of course, this is not a done deal, but just before midnight on Wednesday, Yair Lapid, he's the leader of one of the main rival parties to Mr. Netanyahu's, he phoned the president, Reuven Ritlin, saying that he had got together a coalition. He had six different parties that had 61 seats in the Knesset to get a coalition and get Benjamin Netanyahu out of office. There is still the potential for something kind of fairly dramatic or something big at the last minute. There's still the potential for a surprise turnaround. He has got to, the Knesset has to actually come and formally vote this coalition into office. And Benjamin Netanyahu is kind of working hard. He just needs to change one or two minds from individuals in these different parties, and that coalition could still not happen. So it is not signed on the dotted line, but it is looking very close to being that. As it stands now, Naftali Bennett, this former Netanyahu ally, would be prime minister until 2023, and then Yair Lapid would take over. And who knows? It's hard to say how stable this coalition is going to be. The Lieutenant Colonel Dr. Mordechai Keter, he's a senior researcher associate at the Begin Sadat Center of Strategic Studies. He said, "This looks to me like a car with four different wheels and every wheel going in a different direction. The only thing which they agree upon is the need to get rid of Netanyahu. This objective will be achieved in the first minute of government. So what will keep it together in the second minute?" Well, maybe we'll see that. On the other hand, you've got the fact that some of these people, especially Naftali Bennett, seems like they could be really punished in it if there's snap elections that come afterwards. So they may want to keep this coalition going on as long as possible. It is certainly not a meeting of minds that really agree and that get on well together. But it's remarkable how we're seeing Israel kind of follow in the footsteps of what we had in the United States. You had Donald Trump go, and you had a radical left administration come to power. And that, I think, is really what we're starting to see in Israel. Carolyn Glick had she did a really good, interesting podcast on this with her co-host, Gadi Taub. We can just play a clip from that where she was talking, where they're talking about the changes that we've seen now in Israeli politics. This is clip one.
It looks like the way that it's going to come to the close is that we're going to have the most radical left-wing government we've ever seen. What do you think of that, Gadi?
I think, the downward turn began while counting the votes in America, or maybe while a virus leaked from a lab in China. It was like a domino and things fell all over here. And I didn't dream that what happened in America would happen here, that the radical fringe would somehow be able to, how do you say in English, lemanef? It's a good word.
To leverage.
To leverage its unique position in order to impose on the mainstream an opinion that clearly the mainstream rejects. In Israel, we have a very clear right-wing majority. And now we're going to have a radical left-wing government. It's the first post-Zionist coalition since Israel has been founded.
The first post-Zionist government since Israel's been founded, a radical left coalition. Israel following in the direction of the United States. The pattern is very similar. You're seeing the rise of the radical left facilitated by some of those on the right compromising. You've got those in the United States, the rhinos, Republicans in name only, establishment Republicans, who compromise with the left. The ones that don't really want to look too closely into vote fraud because, they don't want to rock the boat. And, that will get you called a conspiracy theorist in the media. And accusing other sides of vote fraud, that just causes division. So let's set that all aside and let's just come together. That's the approach that you've had some on the right take that are really enabling the rise of the radical left. And you're seeing the same thing in Israel now. You've got kind of Naftali Bennett and others who have compromising with the left, basically. You know, Naftali Bennett was talking about, well, you know, Benjamin Netanyahu, he's divisive. He spreads division because he stands up to the radical left. What we need is we need unity and compromise, and we need to come together. And unity and coming together sounds very good. But there are people here in Israel and in America and the US and Britain as well that are fundamentally opposed to what these nations stand for. So striving for unity, striving to come together with these people, well, means compromising with people that want to destroy you. I should have grabbed the quote, but Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Flory had a quote a few months back talking about how the Republican Party in many ways is in a war. But they don't realize it. There's many that don't realize it. They don't understand that there's an enemy that just wants to fundamentally transform America. But you're seeing that in Israel now, and you're seeing some on the right, like Naftali Bennett and others, compromise with those that want to fundamentally transform Israel as well. Carolyn Glick called the proposed administration, the potentially incoming administration there, the Israeli branch of the Biden administration. And it's also a big victory for the Arab parties. Israel Hayom had an article, A Government of All Its Citizens. And they talked about what a huge change it is for some of these Arab parties to be brought into Israel's government. And as a side point, as a few people have pointed out on social media, this kind of absolutely destroys this narrative of Israel being an apartheid state. I mean, where do you have an apartheid state where the people excluded can come along and be part of government? But going back to this article, A Government of All Its Citizens, it is a big change for these parties to come in now. This article states they've gone from being rejected parties no one but their voters wanted anything to do with, to the deciding factor that holds the fate of coalitions and governments in their hands. This article goes on to state, with Netanyahu's ousting now the sole focus and ideology of the center-left, for whom the ends justify all means, we have witnessed a harried process to legitimize parties that raise the banner of the struggle to decimate the Jewish state. Goes on to say, make no mistake, even if the radical Arab parties ultimately lend their hand to Netanyahu's ouster, a move that would be something of a celebration day for masses of incited Arabs, this will not mark the beginning of an alliance of coexistence between these radicals and the survival government. The survival government is just a tool for them to achieve their central goal, the end of Israel as the Jewish state. So that's what some of these people that they're compromising are after. The article goes on to state, there are Israeli political figures taking an earnest path in cooperating with those radical Arab parties because they're full partners in the struggle to root out Israel's Jewish characteristics and make it a state of all its citizens. There are some Israelis, some Jews that want to end this idea of Israel being a Jewish state, to fundamentally transform Judah, the state of Israel in the Middle East. It talks about how the government is set to be formed that will be a hostage in the hands of these Arab parties. I'll just read a couple more quotes here. An integral part of the multi-tiered strategy to put an end to the Jewish state adopted by the Palestinian Liberation Organization in the 1970s was a focus on the domestic Israeli arena in an effort to undermine Zionist unity and break the Jewish state at the hands of the Jews from within. Bringing down Israel, Judah, from within, just like we see people in the radical left in America and Britain trying to bring down the countries from within. The Arab parties, which are part of the Palestinian nationalist movement, have gotten incredibly close in recent years to achieving their goal, the eradication of Israel as the Jewish state. They want to end what's special and unique about Israel. I think this whole story is really fascinating when you put it in light of what we've been hearing from Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Flurry. He had an article, What Will Happen After Trump Regains Power? This is from the latest print edition, I believe it's the latest one, of our Trumpet magazine. You can read the article at thetrumpet.com, and we'll be more than happy to give you a free subscription to our magazine, The Trumpet magazine. Comes out sort of monthly, 10 times a year, and we are very happy to send that out to you for free. It's all free. We're here to get a message out, not to make money. There's no delivery charges or anything. It's already paid for. And you can order your own subscription on the website, thetrumpet.com. And that's not limited to the United States. You know, I'm speaking from our office in England. We're a worldwide work. We'll send that out just about anywhere in the world. I mean, there are a few countries that are a bit harder to get to, but we make that available in as many places as we can. And if you are in the States, though, we also have our phone number you can give us a call on if you want a subscription to that, 1-866-930-3024. 1-866-930-3024. I'll try and mention that a few more times on the show as well. But going back to this article, what will happen after Trump regains power? In that article, Mr. Flurry goes through some of these Bible prophecies that show that President Trump will be coming back. We've said for years that Donald Trump's first term in office, what we now know is his first term of office, was prophesied. And there are specific prophecies about things he would accomplish. And they haven't been fulfilled. That's not the prophecies of what he would do aren't finished. He will be coming back. And Mr. Flurry goes over this in this article. The book of Amos, he talks about in there. The book of Amos is a book for this end time. It has prophecies of a wonderful world tomorrow, just around the corner, a world that we've never seen in history. And it talks about the events that immediately precede that wonderful world as well. But Amos chapter 7, it has a lot to say about King Jeroboam II. So this book of prophecy is talking about this ancient king. Now it's telling us that there will be parallels between the ancient Jeroboam II and a modern ruler. This ancient ruler would be a type. And so that's why this book of prophecy talks so much about him. And so then we can turn to places like 2 Kings chapter 14 that talk about the ancient King Jeroboam II and know that there's going to be a modern fulfillment of some of these events. And that's what Mr. Flurry really focuses on, some of these scriptures in what will happen after Donald Trump regains power. He talks about 2 Kings 14 and verse 28. I might just grab my Bible here and read that, because it does apply very directly, I think, to some of the things that we're seeing in Israel. And this scripture says, "Now the rest of the acts of Jeroboam and all that he did and how and his might and how he warred and how he recovered Damascus and Hamath, which belonged to Judah for Israel, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Israel?" So Mr. Flurry, in this article, focuses on the fact that it says here, well, Jeroboam has to go to war. He has to really fight to recover something. And he talked about, well, he'll have to fight. He'll have to struggle very hard to recover the presidency. But he doesn't just fight and recover for his own sake, for his own country. When Jeroboam II ruled, he ruled the northern tribes of Israel. The Jews in Judah were a separate kingdom. Now, Britain and America, we're descended from this northern kingdom. The country of Israel, called Israel in the Middle East, is descended from Judah, from the Jews. And Jeroboam II fought and recovered for Israel, but he also fought and recovered for Judah too. Could we see the same thing again? And in that article, Mr. Flurry wrote, "When Barack Obama was president, he was very unmerciful to the Jewish nation of Israel. But in President Trump's first term, he saved the Jewish nation, biblical Israel, from much of Obama's tyranny. He supported Israel in many ways, including helping it sign the Abraham Accords with Arab nations in the region." And he went on to quote, I think it was Lee Smith, with a powerful article he had talking about how the Obama administration hurt Israel. He quotes from that a bit, and note that Obama's main foreign policy aim was to align America with Iran, Israel's enemy and the world's number one terrorist sponsoring nation. Israel's main goal is to bring America down and to wipe Judah off the map. For America to support Iran makes no sense unless you realize that this leader is trying to blot out the name of Israel. Iranian leaders talk about it all the time. This nation wants to blot out the name of Israel, and that includes America and Britain. And he talks about, well, that's what Mr. Obama was doing. And he says, and now that foreign policy is back. Biden is empowering Iran so it may soon obtain nuclear weapons. I'm certain we'll have more Palestinian terrorist attacks now because of who is in charge. And that was written well before the latest war that we saw in Gaza. I'm trying to remember when we were working on this edition of The Trumpet. I think it was at least 6 weeks ago, maybe 8 weeks ago. So this article is probably a couple of months old in terms of when it was written. But he said, well, I'm certain we will have more Palestinian terrorist attacks, and haven't we seen that? But Mr. Flowey goes on to say, God is wrathful about this. If this continues, it will end very badly. You see how important it is that somebody needs to recover something. It appears Mr. Trump, he says a bit further down, may have to recover some of Judah's freedom for us to even deliver God's message. So he was writing several months ago, well, Judah's going to need recovering as well. They're going to suffer during this time when Mr. Trump is out of office, and they're going to need recovering. And you can see the potential for that with this new administration that's forming in Israel. And like I said, it is not a done deal. It could all fall apart. President Netanyahu could still pull off some kind. I don't mean a literal coup, but he could pull something out of his hat potentially. That's still a possibility. But even if that happens, even if Mr. Netanyahu somehow remains in office, you see how they're going to be under a lot of pressure with what the Biden administration is doing with Iran. But Carolyn Glick and Gaudi Taub, they talked about this as well, and just how dangerous this new administration or this potential administration in Israel could be when it comes to Iran and dealing with this situation now where America is empowering Iran. This is clip two.
And now Yair Lapid and Naftali Bennett, who are going to be the twin heads of this government, are part and part. Their security views, they don't have independent security views. They eat from the hands of these people who are mouthpieces of Biden's administration. So right. The difficult thing Israel has to do now, America is our strategic partner, but we have to tell him, as Netanyahu clearly and boldly did, there is a limit to which Israel would not acquiesce to, and this JCPOA is...
I guess we're missing the money part of that quote. I mean, from memory, they went on just to talk about how these new leaders, they're not going to stand up for Israel the way that Mr. Netanyahu did. They're not going to fight the same way he did, and they'll probably go along with what the Biden administration does in compromising with Iran, and that could be really dangerous. And that's exactly what Mr. Flurry focused on in this article, the way that Iran is being empowered by this new Biden administration. And now you've got this Israeli branch of the Biden administration who, I'm sure they won't be as enthusiastic as the Biden administration is in empowering Iran, but they're certainly not going to stand up in the same way that Israel is. The same way that Mr. Netanyahu has done. So it makes this situation even more dangerous for Israel. Brent Nachtigall, our Jerusalem correspondent, he's working on an article on this. I have an early draft of that. I'm sure it will. There'll be some changes as it goes up on our website. But he focused on this as well. He said, more than any other political leader in Israel, Mr. Netanyahu is keenly aware that the anti-Israel policies of the United States, not just Iran, is the major threat now facing the Jewish state. For the past 6 months, the Biden administration has proven that it is continuing the hostile anti-Israel policies of Barack Obama. And he talks about, well, Iran isn't Israel's main problem or their only problem. They're facing Iran, but then they're also facing the most hostile administration in United States history from one side and a massive media onslaught against Israel from the other. And he says, losing Netanyahu's leadership could be disastrous for the state of Israel. Netanyahu is experienced at defending the Jewish state from such threats. However, most Israelis, including its politicians, are not willing to admit that the United States is now fighting for the other side. As with many Republicans in the United States who fail to see the magnitude of the forces arrayed to take down America from the inside, there are plenty of Israeli conservatives that fail to recognize the unique danger Israel now faces from the United States backed Iran. Instead, their personal animus towards Netanyahu, as well as their own vain quest for power, is motivating a naive and short-sighted takedown of a proven leader. We're seeing a massive attack on Israel in the Middle East, on Britain, on the United States. And if you'd like to know more about that, that article that I mentioned for Mr. Flurry is a great place to start. What will happen after Trump regains power? We also have a free booklet, Great Again, that talks about the spiritual reality of what we're seeing in America and Britain, the real roots of the rise of the radical left, of this attack from within. Because there is a spiritual dimension here that you have to understand to know what is happening in this country, or in all of these countries. But you can get those on our website, thetrumpet.com. You can shoot us an email, td@thetrumpet.com, or you can give us a call at 1-866-930-3024. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily.
Do you believe the United States of America has been mainly a positive force in the world for most of its history? Do you believe that America was at one time a great nation? The United States of America was founded on many biblical principles that were incorporated into the Constitution. This lent to its success and positive influence in the world. But the America of then is not the America of today. To anyone examining the current state of America, this should be alarming. It has been a great nation in time past and is experiencing a temporary resurgence in these end times, but it will only be exactly that, temporary. Our free booklet, Great Again, will explain America's status. It will prove that God has been intimately involved in the rise and resurgence of America under President Donald Trump. It will also explain why God is saving America temporarily, how he was doing it, and what is yet to come in America. There is a spiritual dimension to America's rise and decline as a superpower. This free booklet will explain this dimension and how God will soon make America truly great again. Request your free copy of our book, Great Again, at our website, thetrumpet.com.
The Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily radio show, or I guess we're not a radio show anymore. The Trumpet Daily show, I should say, as we are live on video on Facebook and at our website, thetrumpet.com/live. Of course, we are still available on audio at the CRN Digital Talk Network. I need to memorize that a bit better. Like I said, it's my first time guest hosting since we have been on CRN. Well, where's the beef? That might be a question that you are asking if you live in the US, Australia, and Canada. The world's largest meat processing company has been hit with a massive cyber attack. You've got potentially one-fifth of these countries' beef supplies, pork supplies, being taken offline remotely, going after the food supplies, basically, of America, of Canada, of Australia. We've seen a series now of major cyber attacks. We've seen the attack on the oil pipeline that, if you're in America, sent gas prices shooting up to things that still seem remarkably cheap to someone from over here in the UK. I'm still jealous. You see headlines about $5 a gallon gas and kind of do the math and think, whoa, I wish our gas was that cheap. But I know that's expensive for the United States. You've seen that cyber attack directly hit people's wallets. This one potentially could see food prices going up, meat prices, beef prices going up. I saw a headline just from the Wall Street Journal this morning where New York City subway operator, another transport hit with a cyber attack. Like I said at the start of the show, for a long time, talking about a cyber attack has been kind of a theoretical possibility or something that happens, but something that affects businesses, but not necessarily consumers, or something that leads to your email getting leaked and you get lots of spam, but it's kind of annoying rather than really threatening. But now we're seeing this become much more mainstream, much more open, and impacting all of us much more directly. Fox News had a good clip on this, talking about this latest attack. This is clip three.
It doesn't feel like an attack. No explosions, no wreckage, but America is being attacked, and almost certainly by a foreign power. The pipeline shutdown was an attack on our energy supply. The shutdown of meatpacking plants was an attack on our food supply. It sure looks like a demonstration of power by our enemies. Look, you could dress it up, you could pretend it's a gang of criminals simply out to haul in the Bitcoin, but it's got to be more than that. You don't disrupt energy and food supplies for a country as important as the United States unless you're out to play high-stakes politics on a global level. Can we stop it? Apparently not. These attacks seem to proceed one after another. The pipeline, 3 weeks later, meat production. Who knows what's next? And what are we doing about it? It's a test of Biden's presidency, just like China and the origins of COVID, Iran and Hamas, Central America and the border, all challenges.
Spot on there from Fox News Business. Yeah, this is bigger than just a bunch of criminals trying to get a bit of Bitcoin or whatever it is. So just to go through some of those details, JBS, this is a company that controls 1/5 of America's beef and pork slaughtering capacities. They revealed starting on Sunday they were shut down. And like I said, it's expected to meet with higher meat prices. The White House Deputy Press Secretary said JBS notified the administration that the ransom demand came from a criminal organization likely based in Russia. I think since then we found out it was R-Evil. It's the name of the group there. The press secretary went on to say the White House is engaging directly with the Russian government on this matter and delivering the message that responsible states do not harbor ransomware criminals. I don't think the Russian administration needs that kind of a message. I think they know that. They need a message that's much more forceful. But we're getting a good hard look on how dependent we are on technology. Isn't that amazing that just a group of criminals in another country can remotely make your electricity or your gas prices much higher, make it much more expensive for you to commute to work, even threaten your ability to commute to work? And then we're seeing an attack on food. And just using a computer, shut down these meat processing plants, shut down food. And these are small examples compared to what is possible. These are criminal gangs operating with the backing of a nation state. That's still way below full-scale cyber war. I read an article a day or two ago, I think it made a really good point, where it was kind of comparing these cyber criminal gangs with privateers in the 1500s or 1600s, where, here in England, for example, we would allow these privateers to go and attack Spanish ships and then come back to England and be protected. And when Spain complained, we'd kind of be like, oh, there's nothing to do with us. They're private individuals. Whereas really, England was completely behind it and enabling it. I think that's a fairly good comparison. Russia is completely behind and enabling this. They want to hurt the United States, and they're allowing it to do so. There's a lot of evidence that they're helping, that their intelligence agencies would be passing on information, working directly with them in these things. But at the same time, this is just a fraction of what, say, the Russian government would be capable of, or some of these other nation states would be capable of. There are much, much larger attacks possible. Like that clip said, they're testing the United States. They're demonstrating, we can threaten your fuel, your energy. We can threaten your food even remotely. We can cut off your food. And this is just a taste, if that's not too much of a mixed metaphor. But I think we're seeing just how dependent we are on technology. Another story that shows how dependent we are on technology comes from a chip shortage that we're seeing, where if you work in the computer industry, you probably know there's a shortage of microchips right now and certain types of silicon chips for computers. And you may think, well, no big deal. Might cause a bottleneck for new computers, or it's causing a big bottleneck for graphics cards. okay, well, somebody has to wait a few more months before they get this nice graphics card to play the latest game in high resolution. No big deal. We can live with that. But computers have become so essential to so many different things. Chip shortages are causing problems in all sorts of places. They're disrupting the car market because cars have so many microchips in them that there's now a shortage of new cars. And then that's having a run-on effect because this impacts the rental car industry, who sold off a lot of cars during the pandemic and now can't buy new ones to replace them. And so you've had some locations where rental car prices have become ridiculously expensive, hugely expensive. But then even food. Hoosier Ag Today, first time I've ever cited them on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Trumpet Daily Show, I need to remember to drop the radio. Hoosier Ag Today, anyway. They wrote, the biggest factor impacting the ability of US farmers to produce the food we need has nothing to do with the weather, the markets, trade, regulation, or disease. The worldwide shortage of computer chips will impact all aspects of agriculture for the next two decades and beyond. The article goes on to say, farm equipment manufacturers have halted shipments to dealers because they don't have the chips to put in the equipment. A bit further down, parts, even non-electrical parts, are in short supply because the manufacturers of those parts use the chips in the manufacturing process. As farmers integrate technology into all aspects of the farming process, these highly sophisticated semiconductors have become the backbone of almost every farming operation. So technological disruption impacts farming, impacts food production. And again, we're seeing that with this hack now what was the company? JBS. But Rabobank, this financial analyst, they put out a financial report, and they wrote that now a lack of silicon chips even impacts on the price of potato chips. That's how integrated with technology we've become. And like I said, the high food prices, the meat packaging, it's just the tip of the iceberg. And I do think it's fascinating. Just over the last few months, we have had a glimpse of how fragile our world is. We saw that with the Suez Canal, where you had one badly driven boat causes billions in damage and has all these knock-on impacts that's felt around the world because it clogs up a shipping lane. You see shortages in microchips, then having all of these impacts around the world. You see hackers sitting thousands of miles around the world, directly impacting the wallets of people all around the world. In America, Britain, Canada, like I said, these are the countries most affected. And what happens when this isn't just criminal gangs backed by government states, testing Joe Biden or this new administration? What happens when it's full-scale cyber war, massive and big attacks? This is something that is very possible, very, very plausible. And people have been warning about this for a long time. You had back in 2015, and then I think again 2016, you had a couple of massive attacks on Ukraine's energy network, shut down their power grid. And Wired had a good article on that back at the time, several years ago. And they quote an expert, Robert Lee, who worked in these investigations back in 2015, who said, with the right exploit, it's possible that someone could permanently disable the power generation equipment or the massive, difficult-to-replace transformers that serve as the backbone of our transmission system. A nation-state could take it out for 2 months without much issue. So an expert is saying it wouldn't be that hard for a nation-state to take out America's power grid for 2 months. What would that do to be without a power for 2 months? And this article went on to talk about what saved Ukraine when they had these attacks is they could return to manual control and they could manually override some of these software systems. And this article was warning that that's not really possible in the United States, that few power stations have this ability. Fewer people even know how to operate the manual controls. And going back to this expert, Robert Lee, he said, the people who understand the U.S. power grid know that it can happen here. there was a Council of Foreign Relations report, a cyber attack on the U.S. power grid. And it states, most experts believe that the current complexity of the grid operations in the United States would make a switch to manual operations difficult. Newer systems might not allow for manual controls at all. And even before this Ukrainian attack, so this is several years ago, Lloyd's of London, an insurance company, they kind of worked together this plausible scenario of an attack on America's power grid. And they talked about the potential for an attack to have widespread blackouts across 15 states and leaving 93 million people without power, with an estimated $243 billion in damage. They talked about this potentially causing riots in the streets, hospital patients dying as backup generators fail, water supplies impacted during the blackout due to the loss of power to pumps, supplies of portable water become limited across the affected area. Talked even about then leading to leakages from chemical plants and sewage plants, just leading to chaos. You know, you can, an effective cyber attack can really shut a country down. And then, like I said, you've got all these, you've got, people have talked about the danger of a cyber attack on a port. You know, there's so many just different points of vulnerability. Pipelines, ports, you know, electricity, the electrical grid, navigation, and satellite-assisted navigation. All of the, you know, you attack any one of these things, and you start to very quickly cause things to fall apart. You know, America's and Britain and all of, you know, our civilizations are much more of a house of cards than we like to realize. But Trump editor-in-chief Gerald Flurry has been talking about the danger of a cyber attack for years. I think it was 1992, if I remember correctly, his first article on the subject. But he drew attention in that article to Ezekiel chapter 7. Ezekiel chapter 7 and verse 14, a fascinating prophecy here, which says, "They've blown the trumpet even to make all ready, but none goes to the battle, for my wrath is upon the multitude thereof. The alarm sounds, but nobody moves, nobody goes anywhere, nobody takes action." And writing about this, Mr. Flurry writes, "I believe one key end-time Bible prophecy could be fulfilled through the kind of cyber-terrorism," and he quotes this other author, describes. "The trumpet of war is to be blown in Israel, mainly America and Britain. Seems everybody's expecting our people to go into battle, but the greatest tragedy imaginable occurs. Nobody goes to battle, even though the trumpet is blown. Will it be because of computer terrorism?" And so he talked about the potential danger here. And I think you can look at other prophecies in the book of Ezekiel where a cyber attack could potentially play a part. That now that computers are just so much a part of everyday life. If you just go back a couple of chapters, we can go to Ezekiel chapter 4. And Ezekiel chapter 4 talks about a coming siege. And it starts in verse 1, talking about Jerusalem. Verse 2, it says, "And lay siege against it, build a fort against it, cast a mound against it, set the camp also against it, sent battering rams against it and around it." And then he goes on to talk about a siege. And then in the coming verses, so verse 5 and verse 6, he talks about a siege against Israel and a siege against Judah. So this is interesting. You know, Ezekiel is writing long after the northern 10 tribes of Israel went into captivity. And yet he's writing a prophecy of a siege on these 10 tribes. Now, if he was describing the 10 tribes of Israel being besieged and going into captivity anciently, well, it's a bit late to be doing that, to be writing this prophecy of them going into captivity 100 years, more than 100 years after it happened. This is telling us that that ancient captivity is just a type of what's coming. There is a modern siege coming on Britain, on America. And Deuteronomy chapter 28 and verse 52, I'll just turn there briefly, that talks about a coming siege too. This is a chapter, a prophecy for the descendants of ancient Israel, which includes Britain and America. And if they don't obey God, God says, "And he shall besiege you in all your gates. Your enemies shall besiege you until your high fenced walls come down, wherein you trusted throughout your land." You thought you were safe, that you had these high fenced walls, but they're going to come down. "And he but shall besiege you in all your gates throughout all your land, which the Eternal your God has given you." So God says, well, you're going to have this siege. Other nations are going to cut off these gates. They're going to cut off trade. And you can do a lot of damage by cutting off trade, just by stopping goods coming in or out of America and Britain. But could you also have an electrical siege? Be a part of this? This kind of attack from without? You know, if you think about an old style siege where you're cutting off a city, you're surrounding a city and you're cutting off all trade, you're stopping food and water going in there. Well, if you're a besieging army, you do everything you can to cause chaos and destruction within the besieged city. You know, the whole aim of the siege is to crush their will to fight, to make them surrender. Ancient armies would hurl dead bodies over the wall to try and demoralize people and to spread diseases. Poison wells, you know, anything that they could do to weaken the physical health, the mental health, the moral health, to spread fear and panic. And then you see all these prophecies, and God certainly says a lot of disruption and destruction is coming. And you look at the potential for cyber warfare to do that. All right, it is interesting. There is, could that play a role in even in this siege, as well as the trumpet sounding and disrupting the military through cyber warfare? You know, you kind of I've kind of wondered, well, America produces enough food to feed itself. And oil self-sufficiency is more questionable, but maybe that's getting close. But then when you look at how fragile the whole system is, I think you start to see the potential dangers of a siege. You just cut off America's microchips, and then we can't, then, you know, food production starts failing and things start falling. And then could a cyber attack play a role in that siege? And God certainly paints some vivid pictures of everything coming crashing down, society coming crashing down. Now, he talks about that in Ezekiel 5 and verse 2. That says, "You shall burn with fire a third part in the midst of the city when the days of the siege are fulfilled." You know, there's the burning that's related to the siege. There's destruction and rioting and things going on as a result of this siege and of food shortages and law and order breaking down in the cities. And you can certainly see how a cyber attack could help that happen. And how a siege, how cutting off America and Britain could help that happen. You know, we have this illusion of security where we think everything is much more safe and much more stable than we think it is. Everything it really is. And what we're seeing, I think, with some of these hybrid attacks is just that illusion being burst ever so slightly. But, you know, God says everything that is coming is going to come crashing down. Well, there's also tremendous hope in that. God says it. He's in command. He's allowing this to happen. But he's allowing it all to unfold according to a plan. Now, he is punishing Britain. He's punishing America. But he's doing it to help the whole world get to know him. And that's one thing we can never forget. He is in command with all of this that is happening. No, it's prophesied. We're reading these prophecies. We're reading, you know, prophecies from the book of Ezekiel. Ezekiel 7 and verse 14, describing modern weapons and cyber attacks. That's not coming from the mind of a man. That's coming from God. And our free book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy, will help you understand God's plan for our nations, for the world, for you. And like all of our material, it's free. And free shipping, free everything. You know, we want to get this message out. And you can order it online at our website, thetrumpet.com. And once again, you can order it for free by calling that number if you're in the United States, 1-866-930-3024. Well, we will take a very quick break. And when we get back, I have one more subject on a bit more of a positive and inspiring note that I want to finish on. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily.
Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Flurry's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com.
The Trumpet Daily.
Just a few weeks ago, NASA had a remarkable achievement. The first powered flight on another planet. We've got a video that we can show you while I talk about it. A helicopter that they took to Mars. You can start playing that now. And that they were able to fly. And then I think it's just amazing. We can fly a helicopter on another planet. We can. There you go, on the video, you can see it's taken off, hovering around. Mankind can do some amazing things. We can land a massive self-driving car on that planet using a floating sky crane. It carries a laser to vaporize and test rock. It has a helicopter that can go flying around on another planet. Man has an awesome mind. Can do some amazing things. But we've just spent most of the program also talking about some amazing problems, or some huge problems too. You know, why can't our best minds, if we can do that, why can't we solve poverty? Why can't we end war? You know, surely just getting along with each other can't be much more complicated than vaporizing Martian rocks with lasers, or flying a helicopter on another planet. Well, this is one of the big lessons man needs to learn. Our minds by ourselves are fundamentally limited. Herbert W. Armstrong wrote that man is limited in knowledge to that which may be transmitted into the brain through the physical senses of sight, hearing, tasting, smelling, and feeling. Man's most serious problems are spiritual in nature. But man is naturally confined to thinking solely in terms of the physical and material. He cannot grasp or comprehend spiritual problems or spiritual knowledge. The human mind's capacity, wrote Mr. Armstrong, for material accomplishment seems unlimited. You know, it looks like we can do all of these amazing things, but then we can't bring peace. We can't stop crime. We can't stop people in high positions lying or elect reliable governments. We haven't really even got our hand on things like famine or epidemics or poverty. And so instead, all of this brilliant mind just means more and more destructive potential, bigger and bigger problems. And that's why we do cover some of the bad news from around the world. We need to understand how limited the human mind is by itself. But we need to understand that because there's a wonderful solution. There is hope, and understanding that points us to the only real hope that there is. That God has a plan to change human nature. And that's going to bring a wonderful new world to this earth. We need to understand just how deficient and how incomplete man's mind is without God. And in 1 Corinthians chapter 2, God vividly talks about how much we need that Holy Spirit. We need a spiritual dimension to our minds. We're incomplete without it. We can't understand spiritual things. And we cannot solve spiritual problems. I'd like to conclude just by pointing you very briefly to the latest Key of David program. That's a regular program that goes out from Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Flurry every weekend. The latest episode is called The Universe Prophesies to Us. And he talks about the Mars mission. But he talks about God's potential for man. You know, this world is rapidly becoming a darker place. But we need to understand that, yes, man is limited, but God is showing us that limitation because he has a plan to bring us great peace and great hope. And that Key of David program is a great place to get you grounded in that. Like all of our material, you can catch that at thetrumpet.com.